It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're just about a month into the new year, and coming up in our next segment, it's time to assess how those New Year's resolutions are coming, particularly if you've committed to healthier eating habits. The head of the Allegheny County Health Department, Karen Hacker, will be joining us, and you will want to definitely tune in for that. That's coming up here on Essential Pittsburgh in our next segment. But first up today, we're looking at a development this week. According to the American Civil Liberties Union of Pennsylvania, hundreds of people with severe mental illness have been languishing in Pennsylvania's county jails for months and even years. They are defendants deemed incompetent to stand trial, waiting to be transferred to state hospitals. After the ACLU filed a lawsuit, the Commonwealth agreed to devote more resources to treatment and housing for criminal defendants who have mental illness under the terms of a deal approved by a federal judge yesterday. I'm joined now in studio by Vic Volchak. He's legal director for the ACLU of Pennsylvania. Vic Volchak, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, Paul.
You can join the conversation with a comment or question by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at essspgh. Again, the number, 412-246-2002. Vic Volchak, the ACLU alleges that hundreds of defendants waited in jails, sometimes in solitary confinement, for weeks and months. How and why did this happen?
Well, first of all, let me just correct one thing you said. It's not past tense. It's still happening. This is a problem that's been years in the making. We're talking about people who are, for the most part, heavily psychotic, some of them commit serious crimes. Some of them commit lesser crimes. A lot of them, an awful large percentage of them, are homeless folks. And they're picked up on some kind of charge. And either their lawyer or the district magistrate or a judge says, you know, this person just seems out of it. They don't seem to understand what's going on. They are given a competency assessment by a psychiatrist. And if the psychiatrist concludes that the person is unable to either understand the nature of the charges or to assist in his or her defense, they're deemed incompetent. Now, you cannot criminally prosecute an incompetent individual. But what you can do is if the psychiatrist thinks that that person can be made competent with some reasonable period of treatment, you can put them into what's known as competency restoration treatment. Federal courts have ruled in other states that from the date that the judge orders that treatment until the person is transferred into an appropriate treatment program should not be more than a week. And in eastern Pennsylvania, the delays are over a year for folks. And so in the meantime, these people who've got no outstanding charges against them because they're suspended, they're very, very sick, they're very, very mentally ill, they get in trouble in jails, they end up in solitary confinement. They've had a number of people who've either committed suicide or been killed by cellmates. A lot of them decompensate to the point where they can never get back to their baseline. And then after a year, they get transferred to the hospital and there's nothing they can do with them. They've just gotten so unbelievably sick. It's really cruel.
Is this a symptom of a system which really doesn't put as much of an emphasis, perhaps, as it should on treating people and rehabilitating people as opposed to simply incarcerating people?
Absolutely. It is a failure of our mental health safety net. And because there's nothing to catch these folks, the criminal justice system steps in, and the criminal justice system is not the right one to be dealing with these folks. You know, some people have said, you know, this is the result of deinstitutionalization, which happened over many, many years. And that is wrong. I unequivocally reject that.
It's not the result of that.
It is not directly the result. Most of these people can and should be in the community, but they're sick. They can't be out there alone. They need support. When they closed the state hospitals, like Mayview is the big one out here in Pittsburgh, the idea was that every time you close a bed in the hospital, and send a person into the community. There's supposed to be money flowing to the community to provide the support and services to that individual so that they can function in the community. And in some cases, that money never went. In other cases, it went and it's been cut. I mean, there were huge cuts in mental health services during the past gubernatorial administration. And so the problem that you have is not because of the deinstitutionalization. It's because the money that was supposed to be there to help these folks has dried up.
So this is not as much of a Wolf administration. I mean, they've inherited a problem, but you're saying it was created during the Corbett administration.
Well, it predates the Corbett administration. I think it got worse during the Corbett administration when they cut a lot of the funding. The Wolf administration did inherit this problem. It has grown significantly worse in the last year. I don't think you can blame the Wolf administration for that. It's just, I mean, there's a lot of things that were set in motion. But it is. To our knowledge, the longest wait times in the country are what we're seeing out in eastern Pennsylvania. Western Pennsylvania, which is served by Torrance State Hospital in Westmoreland County, are shorter, but they're still about 60 to 90 days, which, you know, when you compare that with a week, it's still
right.
It's still a long time. I got to tell you, I've been doing civil liberties work for 30 years now. I've had a lot of hard luck cases. I had a 2-week period where I went and saw 8 of my clients in jail, and I walked out of there and sat down on the floor and started crying. It is so unbelievably sad to see these incredibly sick people, you know, just getting worse and worse sitting in the jail. So, you know, this is an important settlement that hopefully will start to fix the problem.
And we'll get into that. We'll parse through that. We'll also hear what the state is saying about that settlement in an official statement that was released. But I'm curious about what constitutional rights do people have who are criminally charged but incompetent to stand trial? What rights do these people have?
Right. So, one I mentioned briefly is that if you are found to be incompetent under the Constitution, you can't be criminally prosecuted. You're not responsible for your behavior. So at that point, the choice that the courts have is either you can try to restore that person or make that person competent if you think that's mm-hmm. possible. If not, you either have to release them or you have to put them through the civil commitment process. So you have to show that they're either a danger to themselves or others. Those are your only options.
But if somebody is held for more than a week, that their constitutional rights have been violated.
Right, and that's the basis of our lawsuit. It's under the 14th Amendment Due Process Clause.
How did the ACLU become aware of this, and what led up to the lawsuit being filed?
Yeah, you know, we spent an awful lot of time fielding probably 7,000 or 8,000 calls and letters every year from people complaining about all sorts of problems. Most of those are not civil liberties issues that we can help, and many of them we don't have the resources to handle if they are civil liberties issues. This came in from a lawyer who had a client who was sitting in the jail waiting to get into Torrance, and I'd never heard of this problem. This was almost 2 years ago, and we started investigating and said, oh, this looks bad. And then that person got transferred, so we sort of dropped it. Then we got another complaint, and we reached out to the Defender Association. That's the public defenders in Philadelphia, and they said, oh my gosh, this is a huge problem. We've been trying to fix this for years. Nobody will help us. And at that point, we just really doubled down. And our investigation took about a year and a half to build the lawsuit that was eventually filed in October as a class action lawsuit against the state.
The state responded this month, and while admitting that there was a growing waiting list for the 237 or so beds in the two hospitals where defendants are supposed to be transferred, the Commonwealth has denied most of your allegations.
They did in that document, which is pretty standard. But one of the things that's I think unprecedented in the agreement that the judge approved yesterday is that the Commonwealth has actually admitted now in a court order that the current wait times are unconstitutional.
Were you expecting this case to go to court?
Well, I mean, it's
or were you thinking that, okay, we can settle this out of court? And well, how does all that work?
Well, let's say it is in court. Right. So the Commonwealth attempted to try to settle this before we filed. They found out we were working on it. They wanted to settle this, and we listened to them and said, you're not even close to offering then that's going to fix the problem. You got to realize there are more people waiting for treatment than they've got total beds in the entire state. That's how bad the problem is. So we filed the lawsuit. It's in court. We were scheduled to start a week-long trial yesterday, and we have been not only preparing for trial but negotiating feverishly.
And that's what I meant, is were you expecting this to play out as a full-blown trial and go on for who knows how long?
You know, as of Friday of this past week, I said there's absolutely no way. I mean, we were so—
That there was going to be a settlement.
So far apart, and then Friday, late Friday afternoon, we got a call, and they had dramatically bumped up their offer.
Changed? What happened?
You know, I think that the folks who are now in charge of DHS truly care about these people. They recognize that this is not only unconstitutional, but I mean, it's morally unacceptable. We can't do this to people. And I think they were— we don't have a budget in Pennsylvania, and folks, I think, feel constrained in terms of what they can do. But they looked at it. I think they realized they were going to get absolutely clobbered in court. I mean, there's no defense. You can't walk in and say, yes, we're violating constitutional rights, but we can't afford to fix that. That doesn't work. Right, the Constitution, you can't defend it by saying we're too poor to do that. So I think they knew they were going to get clobbered. They had to do something. And what this agreement does is not only requires the Commonwealth to put a whole lot more treatment spaces out there in across the state over the next year, but it also sets up a mechanism where our expert, who's one of the leading experts in the country, will be a consultant for the state. We're going to work together, not only with DHS, but with the judges, the state court judges, the prosecutors, the public defenders across the state, to try to not only get people out of the state hospitals, but reduce the number of people who are actually being referred into the system, because a lot of them are so sick, there's no way they're ever going to get better. So you're wasting everybody's time by sending them to a state hospital. And they're really doing that is because they have no other place to put them.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Vic Volchek. He is the legal director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania. You can join the conversation with a comment or a question at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Let me say that again. 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM. On Twitter at ESSPGH. What questions do you have? And I'm curious if you are a member of a family where someone has been affected in this way, been languishing in a jail waiting for to be transferred to a hospital while a trial is perhaps pending, and they're waiting and waiting for weeks, or in some cases months, almost a year, as you said, Vic, on the eastern side of the state. We'd like to hear about your experience if you can share it with us at 412-246-2002. That is the number to call. The Secretary of the State Department of Human Services, Ted Dallas, responded to the settlement announcement with this written statement, quote, "This agreement puts the focus exactly where it needs to be, on providing the highest level of services we can for those served by the forensic system. A well-functioning forensic mental health system is not only a critical part of a well-functioning human services system, but also of a well-functioning criminal justice system," end quote. And again, that's from State Department of Human Services Secretary Ted Dallas. So, Vic Volchek, what is your feeling about this settlement?
Yeah, I mean, we're in complete agreement with Secretary Dallas, and I got to give him kudos, because it's my understanding that at the end of the day, he's the one who stepped up and said, you know what, we have to fix this. Whatever we have to do, we're going to do. You know, he's absolutely right. This is a problem that's been years in the making. It's gotten worse. It's resulted in the criminal justice system coming in to deal with people who do not need the criminal justice system. These are not people who need punishment or jail. These are people who need help. They need treatment, and that's what, you know, the mental health system is supposed to do. What we're getting out of this deal, at least preliminarily, and the case is still live. I mean, we may be back in court. There's still some issues that need to be decided.
What would send you back to court?
Well, let me just say that what they're doing is they're going to add at least 170 treatment slots. And by slots, I mean, they're not going to be in the state hospitals. They're going to be in the communities. They could be what are called step-down units or long-term secure residences.
So they're saying there's just not enough room in the hospitals. We have to find in other places for people.
Right, but the thing is, like, our lead plaintiff in this case is a Philadelphia African-American gentleman, late 50s, chronically homeless, schizophrenic. He's literally in this system because he stole 3 peppermint patties from a Dollar General store, right? And that violated our probation for stealing $37 worth of personal hygiene items from a Wawa's, right? This guy does not need to be in a $900 a day maximum security forensic hospital. He could do perfectly well in the community. You pay for some kind of apartment. You give him a high-level amount of treatment. They're called ACT or FACT teams that can go and make sure that he's taking his meds, that he's got what he needs, that he's not decompensating in some way. That costs a fraction of what it would take to put this guy in the state hospital, which is where he is right
now. So it's not just about being able to accommodate people that need to be in state hospitals, but also those who don't belong in state hospitals.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's one of those odd situations where doing well or doing right is cheaper than doing it wrong. The most expensive alternative here is building more hospital beds and sticking more of these people in maximum security hospitals. I mean, you've got like one psychiatrist for 25 people. That's why it ends up being $900 a day, and at least in the eastern side of the state, they're really, we think, getting excellent care. Not everybody needs that. Some percentage of people are going to need that, you know, either clinically or from a security perspective. But so many of these folks can be serviced and supported and held safely in way less security kind of situations. And what you need is a complete continuum of care. You need to provide adequate services across the entire continuum of treatment. And hopefully this settlement is a very strong step to start that across the entire state.
Let's take a question from Greg in the East End. Hi, Greg. You're on with Vic Volchak. Welcome.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. So I had a question and I guess also a comment to all the listeners out there. It seems like this is also a political issue. I know that your panelist had mentioned something about the previous governor, and I'm wondering about our current governor and federal government. Folks with mental health, as we know, are not represented well, and I feel like maybe the public's interest is not being represented well. This is a moral issue, and it seems like our leadership has, you know, failed to deal with this moral issue, and also just in terms of social services, it seems like we're moving away from good social services. So I'm just hoping listeners will get involved politically from hearing this and demand that we have these kind of services. But also I'm curious if you can comment about, you know, how this plays out politically at the state and federal level. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Greg, for that question and comment.
I mean, I think Greg makes a very important point. I mean, one of the public defenders who works with these folks on a daily basis out in Philadelphia calls them the forgotten among the forgotten, right? A lot of them they're so mentally ill that they're estranged from their families. The families just, you know, can't put up with it. They've got no friends. They've got no supporters. They don't vote. They don't have money. They don't have any kind of political clout. These are people that are easy to neglect. So it's easy to stick them in a jail cell, let them rot, let them get worse, and nobody's going to stand up for them. And I think that's part of the reason that the situation was allowed to get as bad as it could, because this is not a constituency that has clout. This is not somebody that politicians regularly care about.
And society was used to dealing with it in this way. Let's stick them in jail and kind of out of sight, out of mind. So my question would be, to Greg's point, is this perhaps this settlement, is it perhaps the first step toward a more enlightened approach to dealing with folks who are mentally ill and who have committed crimes and who are not competent to stand trial?
I think it's a strong first step. And you know, in response to Greg's comment about how this is in many ways a failure of the political system, and I think that's absolutely right. Sometimes you just got to sue them. I'm very proud of the ACLU, my organization, being willing to commit the resources to take this case on. This is not a group of folks that we've typically represented in the past, but we looked at the situation and said, you know, these are voiceless, defenseless individuals. And if we're not going to stand up for them, who's going to do that? I'm proud of the ACLU for bringing this case. But I'm also proud of Secretary Dallas and his folks who, at the end of the day, you know, they could have gone to trial. They could have fought us tooth and nail on this. I think we would have won in the end. But they not only came forward and agreed to this settlement, it's a really good settlement. I'm not sure it gets us all the way to fixing the problem, but it takes us a very long way in that direction. And it still leaves open the door for us if after a year or so we find that no, this just isn't nearly enough or something's wrong, we can recalibrate. And either we'll do that through some kind of agreement with DHS, or we can go back to the federal judge in Harrisburg and have a hearing and ask her to order them to do what we think is appropriate.
How long will it take to solve this problem?
You know, I think DHS is hoping a year. I think that may be a bit optimistic. Like I said, it's taken years to get to this point. I think it's probably going to take some years to get out. You know, the hope is that we can make things substantially better over the course of the next year. The agreement right now contemplates federal court oversight for 3 years, with the possibility of extending that if necessary. While this in some ways it's the end of the litigation, in other ways it's really just the beginning of the process, because it sets in motion a whole bunch of things that need to happen in addition to the influx of significant resources to eventually fix this problem.
Vic Volchek is the legal director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania, and he's been talking about the settlement that was reached yesterday, a deal approved by a federal judge in which the Commonwealth agreed to devote more resources to treatment and housing for criminal defendants who have mental illness. Vic Volchek, again, thanks for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Coming up, did you make a New Year's resolution to eat better? If so, the Allegheny County Health Department wants to help. We'll tell you how. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.